The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
I'm prepared to do anything I can.
Well,
to
do it then.
Come play again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should it be an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Okay, welcome along. We have got a busy football show. Momentarily, we'll be joined by Pat Nevin, and then we'll hear from Gary Breen in conversation with Nathan Murphy. We had the Spurs-Man City game live yesterday and Off the Ball, so the lads had a chat after that at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Spurs winning 2-0, as I'm sure you know by now. Already this weekend, we had Leicester and Chelsea drawn 2-2, Newcastle and Norwich 0-0. Crystal Palace's form has bottomed out. They lost 1-0 to Sheffield United. West Ham 3, Brighton 3. We had Bournemouth, a resurgence, beating Aston Villa 2-1. Everton beating Watford 3-2. Liverpool doing their thing against Southampton 4-0. Manchester United doing their thing, not scoring against Wolves. And Burnley also a resurgence of late, to say the least. A draw against Arsenal following wins against United and Man City. We have Pat Nevin on the line. Good evening, Pat.
Good evening, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Listen, if you're talking to Stuart Hogg, will you pass on our thanks? That was very kind of him.
Have you ever seen anything like that? It's been a long time at the very, very top level you've seen anything like that. And it's a complete brain freeze, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just a brain freeze. There is no thought, no reason. You spent your entire life doing that sort of thing and you just put it down.
Mm.
And it didn't. Do you know when you do any sort of punditry and you try and think of the reasons why, and then sometimes you have no idea? I have no idea what he's thinking about, unless he's trying to get an Irish passport really quickly and I give up.
It was very strange. I mean, we see sitters being missed in football all the time, but generally at least there is the semi-excuse of the fact that the ball was not in your possession, in your control. There were some variables at play. I mean, it was in his hands.
In your hands, there is no excuse for it. Why you wouldn't just... That's why people dive over the line sometimes, isn't it?
Mm.
You know? Because your body goes down with it instead of placing it down there. It's everybody's made mistakes in their life and you think, why did I do that? And most of us do them, you know, once every blue moon. We just don't have to do it in the Six Nations in front of everybody else at an incredibly important time. We talked to everyone. I'm in a rugby family. My wife's more of a rugby fan than a football fan. And it was just jaw on the floor time. Nightmare.
If we segue, if it's not too clunky, into bad finishing, then that does take us to Spurs, Manchester City. So Man City, 30 shots, 10 on target. Spurs had 3 shots in total with 2 on target. Spurs win the game 2-0. So lest anyone look at this thing from afar and suspect that it was a Mourinho masterclass and they kept City chances to a minimum, that was not the case. City just found themselves missing chances. This is an infection that can attack certain teams.
Yeah, Spurs got really quite lucky on the day. You know, generally, if you have that amount of chances and that amount of opportunities with that amount of decent players on the pitch, you will usually win the game. And now and again, it weirdly doesn't happen. And you've watched over the years Pep saying, you know, it's football, it happens, you shrug your shoulders and you move on. But not if it starts happening a wee bit too frequently. And it is a wee bit more frequently than you would expect with a team of that caliber. It's a kind of weird one. Again, try to figure out the reasons for it. You know, you have to get the right guys on the end of it. But you've got, you know, people, Aguero, you want it to land to him. If it doesn't, in Atlanta, someone like Gundogan, who's maybe not in the best of finishing form, it's just a shame that's who it lands to. But, you know, it's... I always make an excuse for say. I generally always do because they're always playing really, almost always playing really well. They've got loads of possession. It's not always dull possession. It's sometimes with a positive attitude and it's creating chances. So, you know, in time, generally, you know, you would be saying, you know, that'll be fine. It'll be okay in time. Problem is, you've got this massive spectre of Liverpool sitting there, you know, and they're not doing that. They're not making those sort of mistakes. They just keep on putting it away. And at the moment, I mean, the gap is gigantic. For a team of Manchester City's quality, that is now a gigantic gap. And they're quite clearly looking behind them rather than looking ahead of them just now.
Because we saw City against Manchester United the other night when a chance broke to them in the box and they completely overplayed their hand and never got the shot away and Guardiola was incensed. So it's fresh on the back of that. It is very tempting to say, well, this is symptomatic, the bad finishing, I mean, symptomatic of a more sloppy Manchester City. But you look at all their running stats, they actually haven't dropped off. They haven't taken physically, anyway, their foot off the pedal. They are still working as hard as they were last year. As you said, Liverpool's brilliance almost heightens the critique that we'll give to Man City around those missed chances. But I guess they with the United one the other night and then this game at the weekend, there is that sense that something has gone awry there.
Yeah, and that's what you're always asking yourself. You think to yourself, right, OK, what's going wrong? What do we do to change it? And then you think that is a really hard question. Do we want less possession? Do we want to create less chances? You know, all the things that you think are the right things that have got Man City to where they were last season, that have got all Pep Guardiola's teams to where they get to, surely they can't all suddenly be wrong. You know, but then the other side of it, the big argument back is you can't get lucky that regularly, you know, unlucky that regularly. There must be some reasoning behind it. I don't know, maybe it is the spectre. Maybe it is the fact that they've known for quite some time two things. Number one, for a long time, they can't make any mistakes. So there's a tentativeness because you have to make sure every time. So there's a tentativeness in front of the goal, and that's where you're going to see it. You're going to see it in front of the goal. And I suppose the second thing is now is, well, we've lost it now. So is that kind of desperation? Maybe that's lacking to some degree as well, because to score a goal generally, you need to be absolutely desperate. There's not that many tap-ins in a game. You still, when you get a chance, there's still somebody pretty damn close to you, usually closing you down. There's still a goalkeeper throwing himself out in front of you, and it's pure desperation, pure focus. So all those things, they have to be right up there. And it's that cliche, everybody always says the same thing. You know, it's the difference between success and failure is 1 or 2% or whatever. And although there's so many points, is it 22 points now?
Yeah.
Some of that between them.
Yeah.
And Liverpool. And that doesn't sound like a small thing. But it actually might be little small things that are making that difference, you know. And they just accumulate. And they have accumulated for them. And it may well be another thing is City. Their eye must now be on Champions League. It absolutely must now be on Champions League. They'll put all the thoughts, all the consideration in that sort of direction. And, you know, they get beaten the game. I'm not saying they shrug their shoulders. They will be disappointed, but they know that's not their deal now. They want to get second place, and, you know, they should be able to do that, although Leicester are chasing them, and they want to do Champions League, and they want to get to the end, you know, right to the top of Champions League. They've got a good chance of doing that, because now they can probably, you know, they can take the foot off the gas to some degree and rest the players they need to rest before Champions League game. So, oddly enough, it might have one little shining light at the side, though, but it can't happen again next season. I don't think they can accept that again next season.
And interestingly, Pep Guardiola is trying to pivot expectations a little bit at the moment, because after the game, he said, last year was extraordinary, but people still said you didn't win the Champions League. That is why I will be judged if we don't win it in my final period here, that I will be a failure here, and I know that. So already he's kind of trying to just position the Champions League as the missing piece of the jigsaw, which, to be fair, in many respects, is fair enough, and then that is a glorious tenure if he does manage to win the Champions League.
It's not a big call, though, isn't it?
No.
Lots of managers just saying to you, you know, it's difficult. You listen to what Frank Lampard's saying recently, you know, we've not getting new players in, top four might be tough. His is, well, I better win the Champions League now. It's not
a cop-out. No, you're right.
It's not, but it's like, you're all right with that.
So, John Stones, one last one. You know, Gary Breen on commentary yesterday at one point kind of just remarked, I actually can't believe Otamendi is a Manchester City player. Mistakes there. But it made me curious. John Stones now, as time ticks by, his career is almost disintegrating. Like the sand is falling through his hands. Is he that bad defensively? Like what is the issue with Stones that he can't nail down a place in this team, develop, improve, and become the player that many, many, many people thought he would become? This is a quite extraordinary fall from grace here.
Yeah, including me. I thought he would be phenomenal because he was improving so quickly. He had all the attributes you needed. He was quick, and he still is quick. You know, the fact that he plays the ball well, he's comfortable in the ball, all those sort of things. The things he expect to learn, you know, I'm sure Gary said it, plenty of people say it, I often say it, a centre-half kind of comes into his own about 25, 26, 27, round about then. Before that, you're still a kid. Every time you need to learn and learn and learn, because every mistake you get you make gets noticed. And Pep knew that, and Pep was seeing the odd mistake and saying, no, I get it, it's okay. We'll just iron them out and you'll learn the game. But maybe those mistakes didn't stop happening. And he's thinking, well, wait a minute, I've given you all, I backed you. Because Pep did back him. He really backed him when a lot of people weren't. And he stuck with him and he thought to himself, well, those things I expected you to improve on, you're still not quite improving. Now, whether they're John Stones' fault 100% or whether the fact that you're playing with a team, it doesn't really cover that position particularly well. And if everybody has to, if you're not playing with company beside you, any centre-back's not going to look as good anyway. But I have to say, I'm really surprised. But if you know, he'll watch him training all the time, he'll see him in games, but it's the madness of, it's just about anybody who plays centre-back before him a lot of the time. You know, full-backs getting sent in there, centre midfielders getting sent in there. It's, and you mentioned Otamendi, but it's anyone. It's just about anyone who got stuck in there beforehand. So it's a massive, massive fall. And it's, don't often say it about players, but, and I certainly about Manchester City, but John Stones probably ought to get out, mate. You really ought to get out of there. It's with you and the manager, it's not working now. And whether you just need to recalibrate and under a different manager, a different system, a different style, and readapt and change. But it's a schism. And it's so bad, you would wonder sometimes, has there been something said between the two? Has there been a fallout? But Stones doesn't seem that type, does he?
No.
He doesn't seem the type he's going to walk in, batter the door, and have a go at the manager. It doesn't seem like that. He doesn't seem the type that's gone out drinking and he's fed up with him for that. None of it seems to add up, other than the fact that maybe Pep was expecting more improvement at this point, because he's now in that area now. He's not a young centre-back anymore. This is your career. This is where you should be. You should be coming to your pinnacle. And the question is, has he actually got there? And maybe he hasn't improved in those areas.
Yeah, he's 25 years old now. He has started 3 of the last 8. The last time he played was in that 2-2 draw against Crystal Palace. Guardiola was asked specifically why Stones was not even in the squad for this Spurs game. And he said, no, there's no injury. I decided to bring Eric. That's Eric Garcia, the 19-year-old. I decided to bring Eric. Eric played so good when he played, so I bring him. And that was the extent of the explanation. So there we are. That is the John Stones story. Liverpool, 25 games. Because, you know, we have to put Manchester City's failings here into context. I think before yesterday, they were only 5 points off where they were this time last season. Okay, so 25 games in, Liverpool have 73 points. So bear in mind, 73 points. 73 is the number here. After the same number of games, Liverpool on 73. Treble-winning United had 51 points. Complete failures there. Arsenal's Invincibles had 64 to Liverpool's 73. Mourinho's first season at Chelsea also 64 to the 73. And Guardiola's 100-point City had 68 points. So what they are doing is phenomenal. They would be whacking anybody. And that is part of the story here. The question I wanted to ask you was, the rest of the table is very, very bunched. If you go from kind of fourth, fifth down to relegation zone, there isn't much in it. Bournemouth and Burnley have turned their seasons around with a few results. I heard someone make the argument yesterday that this showed that this was not a good league, that there was only one good team, well, City too as well, but then really very, very average league. So is that your reading of the situation, or is it actually that, you know, the Wolves of the world are now much richer than they were a decade ago, and they're actually much better?
You know what? If you're a pessimist, you look at it one way. If you're an optimist, you look at it the other way.
Okay.
It's a competitive league. You want a competitive league. I'm delighted. It's a great thing to have that level of competition. I don't think, if you look at the teams, it is the best I've ever seen. It's the best league in the world that I've ever seen. It's not that. But certainly there's teams in there that are not fearful of each other anymore. I mean, if you look at the weakness of teams like Arsenal, you know, so you've not got teams turning up at Arsenal scared to death anymore. So I kind of like that. Mm. On the other side of it, the side that I don't like about it is there's just too many teams that when they go away, they're parking the bus, and that's kind of making the game a little bit dull. That's the only thing I've got about it. All the other stuff is, they're just much of a much. They're pretty close together. The best ones are probably slightly less good than they were. I mean, Chelsea aren't as good as the team as they've been in the past. Certainly Spurs aren't as good as the team they were for a couple of years there. So there's a drop there, 100%. So those ones have dropped a bit down. The others, they've moved up a bit. And that's a really good thing. You say Wolves, but you know, Burnley have been where Burnley always are. And I love that bunching. It'll change, it'll adapt. I just like the idea that there's a willingness to adapt and you've got different ideas in it. And just looking at the bottom of it, though, Norwich do seem a distance away, but I still like watching them. And they're not a terrible team, but, you know, they've just not got enough kind of quality, maybe in the final third, and you know, particularly as goal scorers. And, yeah, they are a little bit sluggish and slow at the back in comparison to all the other teams. But other than that, is there a team down there that you think, right, you're absolutely useless, you're absolutely hopeless, and you're not good enough, you won't stay in the league? I don't think there is one. You can watch Watford sometimes, and they can go and take on anyone, and they're second bottom just now. So it's a poor league. Yeah, you can say that if you like, but I think it just depends on whether you're a pessimist or an optimist. There's quite a few things I'm liking about it. And it's about something else, by the way. I don't know if you noticed this, or anyone's noticed it. It completely crossed me by. Liverpool last season, you know, all the goals they scored. Do you know 30 of their goals were made by their fullbacks? And I've just realised what a difference that is making to them, because they're doing the same again this year. And I kind of hadn't realised it. You start looking at everybody else. Who else is getting that sort? No one's as close to it. So we're all talking all these different reasons why Liverpool are miles ahead. And there's a whole bunch of different reasons. But it is those different reasons. Or you can look at Salah, this, or you can look at, you know, whatever, Mane. You can look at, well, Henderson's having a great time. And then you look at the fullbacks. It's not just the good fullbacks and create some goals. It's great. A million. It's so many goals. So it is a case of you look at Liverpool and you think, oh, yeah, they're absolutely brilliant and better than everyone else. I think that's just because they are an extraordinarily special team. And it's, I was with a couple of Liverpool players recently, and, you know, the old school guys, and for a long time they've been saying, yeah, you know, there's lots of reasons why this team aren't as good as, and they're all beginning to waver a bit now, aren't they? Beginning to think, actually, there's not really many arguments left now. They are amazing. They are absolutely stunning.
No, the coughs are softening, I would suspect. I know, obviously, you're friendly with David Moyes. So West Ham and Brighton drew 3-3. That leaves them, West Ham, that is, with 1-8. And I suppose the issue is the fixture list upcoming. They have Man City away, Liverpool away. They'll have Southampton. Then they have Arsenal. Then they have Wolves. Then they have Spurs away. And then they have Chelsea. Now, there's not much reprieve there. David Moyes said, I'm angry. The players know I'm disappointed. In the main, we're very good. This is the Brighton game, obviously. But a couple of really silly mistakes, which is often the curse of teams who are fighting for survival. You'll often hear managers say that. So I know you rate him. I know you respect him. And he's gone in there and he's struggling to turn this thing around. How turnable around is it?
It is, because they're only, you know, there's only two or three wins and you're out of there. I mean, you watched the nightmare Everton had, and there they are, well, mid-table, absolutely fine, no problems at all. And you can do it, but you need everybody to completely and utterly buy into it. I kind of like the fact that the last game I was at was a game they played at Leicester a few weeks ago there, and no one could have done anything because that team just went off it at all. It was awful. He tried different systems. He got a bit of a lift out of them for a period of time. But you're looking through that grouping of players there, and I just don't know if there's enough, not particularly up front. I mean, really, is Haller going to score enough goals for you? I'm just not sure that's going to be enough. He's going to have to find a way of kind of, you know, just grabbing points here and there. And grabbing points here and there and sneaking little wins that you probably didn't deserve. I mean, having said that, had they won in the weekend, which they probably should have won with the opportunities they had and the position that they were in, probably wouldn't be talking that much about them just now because, you know, they've had a decent little run, West Ham. The previous games that they'd had, actually, I'm talking about a different game here. I'm talking about, you know, let me have a look up. Yeah, the Brighton game, yeah. But they blew it. They absolutely blew it. And it's the stupidity of mistake. Just the one that had the deflection and went back, and you're just looking at it thinking, that's bizarre. That never happens. So when that starts happening, I think what you're suggesting is probably true. You know, when the luck's against you, as well as the confidence, it starts falling apart. I'm not writing them off yet. Okay. I don't write anyone off at the bottom of the league now because every one of them have shown that they're capable of going in a little bit of a run. I'm just not sure about, and I don't know if it's Moyes. I just think it might be the group. I think it might be the team. They're just not enough good players there.
Meanwhile, your favourite team, Leicester, who you never miss, once again. Yeah, once again, you're at a Leicester match. So it was Leicester 2, Chelsea 2.
Do you know, I was dying to talk about that game. Nothing got to do with Chelsea, right? And everything got to do with that is the best old school game of football I've seen this season. And I mean old school, right? And you forget what it's like sometimes. You mean, if you're watching Premier League every week and you're going to see games, and you're seeing a lot of very tactical games, and you see Man City playing that tactical way, and then bursting, and then everyone getting in possessions, and you kind of close your eyes and you know what everyone's doing.
Yeah.
And every team's kind of got that style. And this game was mayhem. It was just bizarre. And just, hey, that's what it used to be like. It wasn't, and also back onto those teams that, you know, put nine behind the ball, and they play in the break, expecting three or four breaks, and that's a tactic everyone does as well, particularly away from home. And then you go and watch two teams that say, stuff that, let's just have a game of football.
That's been the Chelsea way all year, really, though, isn't it, in the main?
It has. And it's kind of Leicester as well, to be honest. Most of the time it's Leicester as well. So it shouldn't have been that much of a shock to me that game went like that. And it's in no exaggeration. It came to 85 minutes and I looked up at the clock and I thought it would be about 62. And it was 85. The game's flown like that. Mm. And every moment of it was enjoyable. And it's not a case it was millions of stupid mistakes all the time either. It was just an openness of the game, a length of the game, a willingness for every player just about in the pitch. Oh, both fullbacks are hammering forward, you know, they're really open in the midfield. They're desperate to score all the time. They're throwing everybody up for corners and free kicks. And then they want to just play. And honestly, I don't often say it because I don't want to sound like an old fuddy-duddy old git, but it really did make you think, oh God, I wish it was like that again. Yeah. A wee bit more often. It was an utter joy of a game of football to watch. Now, anybody watching on telly, I hope it came across, because I walked outside afterwards. I'd get the train up from London. I was in London. I got a train up for London and I got a train back down. Honestly, that train was buzzing.
Yeah.
And it was 2-2. The place was absolutely, I walked out. It was really, really good fun. And it's, I'd watch Leicester most weeks. And Chelsea are kind of the same, but it kind of doesn't always work for them, because at Stamford Bridge, you get people just sitting back. Mm. Honestly, I'd watch Chelsea-Leicester every day of the week.
Yeah, I appreciate what you're saying. Nobody wants to be the back-in-my-day merchant, but there is no doubt some of the vibrancy has gone out of games when this kind of positional choreography is just so embedded in their DNA from academy level. And as you said, you have a vague, if not a very good idea of what everyone's going to do at given moments. And it just loses some of the spark. It loses kind of, in a way, when you think about it at its core, what kind of football and most sports are, that unpredictability, that immediate reaction in the moment. So much of that now is choreography.
You know, let's take Manchester City for a few years there. I'm going to leave Liverpool out of this, because I think they are cavalier. I think they're another
one. Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah, yeah.
Leave Liverpool out of this, because they're great. They do it brilliantly. Just off the scale. But Manchester City, right, even though I love what they have done when they were at their best, because it was beautiful and it was this little ticky-tacky chess match, bang, 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 took ages but finally got through. But did it have you in the edge of your seat all the time, really?
No, and nobody felt particularly good saying that the Spanish team were a bit boring for a while, but it was true.
Yeah, absolutely. Even Barcelona sometimes, they passed teams to death, and it wasn't a game. It was an exhibition.
Mm.
And we all like exhibitions, but, you know, I'd rather go and watch a competition than an exhibition. And they were, it felt like exhibition games a lot of the time. And I'd to take nothing away from them, the best technical side I've ever been, and some brilliant skills and great goals. But there is that little thing of, I don't want blood and thunder, and I don't want all the guts and heavy tackles. It's not that you're looking for. It's just an openness and a willingness and a...
Spontaneity. Yeah. Spontaneity is the word I was looking for.
And it's hard, but the thing is, it takes two to tango in that one. You can't do it with one team doing that. I feel sorry for Liverpool sometimes, because they have to play against that. Quite often when I go to see them at Anfield, you know, teams are sitting in and they kind of have to try and do that play through all the time. But at least they've got a cavalier attitude and don't let it drop.
Mm.
And that's why he used to love the heavy metal football, when they bring that on in those sort of days. But there was that kind of wistful moment. And look, hey, it's not just football. It happens. You've seen it in rugby. We started off with rugby tonight.
Yeah, you've seen
it in rugby. It was a period of time. I remember England won the World Cup. And I remember I used to love watching the 70s and 80s rugby, when there was a lot of passing and moving the ball, and it was beautiful and it was fantastic. And the ball's all moving. And then you watch them and it was like kick to touch and it was just kick for position all the time. And you're thinking, this is dull. No one's running the ball. Sports happen. They adapt, they change. And I just hope that, you know, the successful teams now are, and they are, Liverpool are doing it. So let's hope everyone thinks, yeah, that kind of Barcelona, Man City thing was really, really good. But let's have a look at Liverpool now and what they're doing. Because if everyone starts doing that, we'll have a great product again.
Well, that's true. Before you go then, I think you were either at Manchester United and Wolves, nil all, or you watched it?
Well, I watched most of it.
Okay.
Oh, it was tough.
Well, I didn't. I had a busy weekend at different bits and bobs. I didn't get to see this, so give me the quick version.
But to be honest, the quick version is that Manchester United looked like the sort of team that could happen to. You know, that could happen. And there is a huff and puff about it, but certain players, and again, you know, it was one or two players who I rate. You so miss Rashford. It's massive how the team changes when he's not there, because there's a lack of stretch in the team. Yeah, that's going to be a problem. But he's got skills now that are really improving. So as soon as he's gone, you realise, oh, actually, it wasn't quite good. It was bleeding brilliant, you know, and it makes a big difference. And then the others around him who are getting space because of his movement are getting less so, and they look lesser players because of it. And, you know, I kind of feel sorry for them, but, you know, that's the deal. You need to lose your best players now. And again, I was actually watching it on a TV screen, because I was coming from Leicester. I had to get to an airport, sat in an airport lounge watching it. And the amount of people who watched it for 10 minutes and then stood up and walked away,
yeah.
It was constant. And not to get a plane, then get some food and come back again. And they all say the same thing. Still nil-nil.
Yeah.
And with no excitement and actually very little expectation as well. So it was a wee bit disappointing because there was a real opportunity there. You know, can Chelsea slip up? You know, they've got a chance to go and push on and press on, but they never make it anywhere near good enough use of it. And if you're looking at Manchester United this season, they look as if they should be good enough to get top four, and the answer is still no.
They've signed Odion Ighalo, which didn't exactly have fans turning up at Ed Woodward's house to say sorry. Former Watford striker. Yeah, I know. Is he trolling them? Is this just like a middle finger to them? And now, look, he scored 39 and 99 for Watford before, but he's been on loan over in China, I think, and it's 4 million in loan fees and his wages. And it's just like, you know, the kind of silly signing a team in United's position end up making and justifying somehow. Bruno Fernandes, I'm more interested in. Is he the missing link to anything?
Could be. He's a good player. There's no doubt about that. Certainly, he looked lively enough. He does look lively enough in that midfield there. But we've seen a number of players come to Man United and look great for a wee moment and then fall away. Because the expectation, as everyone says, is huge there. But it's the expectation of him to drag the rest up with him. You know, if you're a new player coming in, you kind of want to come in and, you know, fit in with something really good. They're kind of almost expecting him to come in and then drag everybody else behind them. That's a big call to do somewhere, you know, anywhere, but Manchester United in particular, especially if there's no great expectation of Pogba being able to do it week in, week out for you anytime soon. But you never know. It could change. It could switch like that. He's had really good periods in his career already as Manchester United manager, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But the one thing I would say about them, they've got the player they kind of wanted, you know, and that's the unusual thing about that transfer window. I thought there was going to be a lot of panic buying, and there wasn't a lot of panic buying. It's actually quite sensible. I think he's a good buy. That is his value, and he's available, so you get him, that's fine. You know, obviously, they're going to buy £4 million for a centre forward. That's just a punt. There's nothing more than that. It's just cover. And it might score you a few goals, and that's absolutely fine. But do you really want to go and spend the monies that, I mean, a classic one, this Cavani was one of the big calls that was going on just now. And there were I heard some suggestion of €23 million or something that was wanted for him by PSG for a guy who's the age he is, who's injured quite a lot, who's at the end of the contract anyway. He ain't getting a game. And by the way, there's a reason for that as well. I'm not saying he's a bad player, but really, is that where you're going to go forward?
Yeah.
And the fact that nobody was panicked into that, too many of those sort of deals, it just made me think there's a wee bit more sense in the league just now. It surprised me because I expected this was the one, because it's all so tight and all so close, and, you know, and a couple of points will make a big difference. I thought they would panic, but there wasn't much panicking going on.
Yeah, fair enough. There was a time when United used to get Henrik Larsson on loan, but those days are...
There's not many of them.
No, it's not. There's not, to be fair. Just a last one. What of Solskjaer's demeanour through this period at the moment? What are you seeing?
Just like everybody goes under sort of pressure. You know, the funny thing is, he's not used to that pressure. He's not used to that. Nobody is until you walk into that. You know, often, to talk about in a Scottish context, anyone who's ever managed Celtic or Rangers always says, it doesn't matter. You think you know, but you don't until you're there. And I think Manchester United is exactly the same. You may know the club, you may have watched it. Everybody thinks they know. It's like being a player. Everyone thinks they know how to be a player because they watch players. It's kind of different when you're out there. It's kind of different when you're standing in that one. And he's made a couple of, I think, quite obvious mistakes when you're reacting to things that you shouldn't have reacted to. But I understand why you would do that. He's still fairly young. He's still fairly new in the job. He's still fairly new as our manager. But I don't think he's made as many mistakes as a lot of people have suggested. And if he gets a bit nippy sometimes, if he, you know, I think when he gets back to his normal personality, which is that the laid back one you see now and again, where he's given not a lot away and it's a wee smile on his face, I think that helps him, helps the fans, but it absolutely hugely helps the guys in the dressing room as well, because they see a confidence that might actually not be in there, but they need to see that as well. So that demeanour that is the slightly more confident, slightly relaxed, slightly chirpier one that he's got, he needs to keep on bringing that to the fore again.
Okay. Pat Nevin, as ever, on a Monday. Thanks, Pat.
Pleasure. See you soon.
The ads start now. Paddy Power sponsors the Off The Ball Football Show.
Now, welcome back. As mentioned, Nathan Murphy and Gary Breen were on commentary duty in North London yesterday. They watched Spurs 2, Manchester City 0. And then had a chat afterwards.
So Gary Breen with me at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Three things we learned from today's game then. Jose Mourinho, was that a masterclass? Is he back?
It wasn't the level that we've seen in terms of those standout performances we've seen over the years. But certainly there was definitely little instances of it. The fact that they were just staying in the game, waiting for a break. They got that with a sending off and took advantage straight away to get that first goal. From that moment on, as much as City were able to cut Spurs open in the first half and just weren't prolific, weren't clinical enough, I just felt that Mourinho would make the tactical substitutions to make sure that his team's protected that lead, because we said it so often, he knows how to do that. They've dropped no points from winning positions under him, having dropped 12 under Pochettino early on in the season. So this is a different Tottenham team. There's none of that expansive fullbacks going in advanced areas looking for a second goal. It's protecting what you have. And they did that and they stayed in the game, got the first goal and invariably got the second and won the game.
A sixth Premier League defeat of the season for Manchester City. What have you learned about them today?
I've learned that you can't hope to compete at the top end of the Premier League if you haven't got a defence you can rely on. Going forward, I know they weren't at their best today. Probably should have took their chances. Obviously had that penalty, didn't do that. If you can't rely on your defenders to keep the other opposition out of the game, you've got no chance. And if you think about how dominant Liverpool have been and that the fact that they're going to win a Premier League title, they're going to win a Premier League title this season because of their defence. Strikers win you games, defences win you titles, win you leagues. And that's the difference. You take Laporte out of that team, Manchester City can't keep the opposition out. The second goal is a complete nonsense. Ontependi's in a good position on the end of the box, goal side of Son, goes charging out to win the ball, played round him, Son is in on his own, finishes, game over. And this is a problem you have. But it wasn't just him. Walker lashed at that first clearance on the corner. Moore, a brilliant reverse pass on the cross, and Bergwijn with a brilliant finish. But we've seen it time and time again this season. Manchester City have not got a defence you can rely on.
VAR is going to be a big talking point yet again from a meeting of these two. Ultimately, what happened 5 minutes before half-time with the initial penalty kick being given and then the second penalty kick not being given? Did we just get the right decision in the end?
I think it's the right decision, but the problem is how long it took to come to that. And that's a frustration, because the phase of game went on for what felt like an eternity. I think you had it down at something like 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes. And then suddenly, Mike Dean stops the game, goes to listen to a message coming through on his ear from Stockley Park to say it's a penalty. I mean, that's a complete nonsense. No one here, certainly the supporters, we've got the benefit of maybe looking at the monitors in front of us, but the supporters had no idea what was happening. Suddenly points to the penalty spot and you're thinking, well, that's just a complete nonsense. Then, on the rebound, Lloris comes out after a brilliant save. Obviously, he's, I think, his fourth penalty save in the last four games, something like that. But he goes after the rebound. Sterling gets there a touch before him, in my opinion. We're looking at another VAR decision on whether or not it's a penalty. Decision came back pretty quickly that it wasn't. And this is the frustration. There's just no consistency. That's what really gets me up.
So Liverpool now 22 points clear. No team in the history of English football's ever gone 22 points clear at the top of a top flight table. It means six more wins and the league is done. Could even be done in March. I know you were watching them yesterday, a 4-0 win against Southampton, and the conversation between now and the end of the season is going to be about greatness.
Yeah.
And comparing them to the Invincibles, comparing them to Manchester City of last year.
That conversation won't come from Klopp. Mm. He'll have no interest in that. And the only problem you think in terms of going for a record points total is that he'll rest players going into those Champions League games. And so he should, because he's on about winning title challenges. But in terms of giving it some context in terms of what Liverpool have done, 70 points by January, it is unbelievable. And when you talk about the greatest Premier League teams, you're obviously talking about the treble winning team of 99 of Manchester United, of which this Liverpool team are over 20 points ahead of them at this stage of the season. Then you talk about the Invincibles of Arsenal. They're over 10, 12 points ahead of them at this stage of the season. It's relentless. It is just a staggering level of performance in terms of points, because I would argue that they were probably looked better and certainly looked better defensively last season than they have this. Yeah, no team seems to be able to lay a glove on them.
So what is it then? What is it? What's the X factor in this Liverpool team?
Well, it's throughout the team. I genuinely believe that. I think it's a combination of so many things. I think, obviously, they've got that brilliant front three. They've got a functional midfield. And they've got a defence now that can win them games. A goalkeeper who wins them points rather than loses them points, as has been the case in the past. They are just a team that's been built for a fraction of the cost of their rivals. And it's just testament to what Klopp's done. It is an amazing job he's done in terms of galvanising that whole football club.
We had a situation a number of years ago, I remember, at hurling, when Kilkenny were on their great run and they didn't give a man of the match. They basically gave it to Brian Cody, to the team. And we're in player of the year form right now. And
yeah.
Sadio Mane's in contention, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Jordan Henderson's very much come into the mix. Maybe Virgil van Dijk is player of the year for the second year in a row. Like, if you were still playing and you had your vote, like, who's your player of the year?
Well, I can see the merits for all of those guys that you argued there. I think Henderson could quite comfortably win it, but I don't think it would be a fashionable vote. But you have to identify what he's done. He's going to lift trophies that iconic Liverpool captains like Gerrard are not going to lift. He's going to be in the same bracket of your Graham Soonesses now. That's amazing in terms of being the driving force, because it's not just that. He's not a cheerleader. He's not that type of guy. He's actually really competing on that pitch and driving them forward. He got his goal yesterday, got an assist as well from midfield in that advanced area. Now that Fabinho's come back from injury, he's pushed Henderson further forward. But there are so many. I think Mane is the best, and all the Liverpool supporters say it, the best left winger they've had since John Barnes' days. But there's so many people to choose from. But I would still counter that by saying, and you'll know I'm going to say here, take Van Dijk out of that team, and that is not the same points team. It's not the same Liverpool team.
Is he the best centre-half to have ever played in the Premier League?
I think he's got the potential to be. There's no doubt about that. I think you're going to talk about longevity in terms of what Rio Ferdinand done in terms of all the titles he won. Obviously, John Terry, talk about the iconic Arsenal defences. But I think in isolation, in terms of what he can do, I don't see that Terry has his pace in terms of dealing with situations being dragged into those fullback areas. I don't see that Rio Ferdinand has his physical dominance in terms of dealing with big, robust centre-forwards like an Andy Carroll. He's just got the complete package. He really has. And I would also argue that he's the type of player that makes the other players better around him. I've never really experienced that at all in my career. The only person who's ever done that is Roy Keane. He makes average players better. In fact, he made very brilliant players at Manchester United better. Van Dijk's doing that at Liverpool.
Speaking of Manchester United, scoreless draw against Wolves yesterday. Bruno Fernandes came in, he started, he obviously didn't have much time on the training pitch. The midfield has been a huge problem, the lack of creativity, the lack of anything really in midfield for Manchester United. Can he make that instant impact, do you think, between now and the end of the season? There can be some sort of a transformation of what United are doing in midfield?
I think he can make an impact. I think we talked about players certainly associated with Tottenham coming over from the Eredivisie. And certainly him coming from Portugal is a big ask. Look at his stats. They're incredible in terms of the goals, assists he's had since the start of last season. It's exactly what Manchester United are missing. Whether or not he can replicate that in the Premier League remains to be seen, because I'm not convinced that players, even top players, can do that when they come to the Premier League. It's so physical, it's so demanding. But the only thing I would say in terms of getting a creative plan, and Solskjaer's starting to talk about him like a Paul Scholes in terms of dictating play, I don't like those comparisons. Why is he even saying that? And because if you get a player who dictates play, it's going to negate how Solskjaer sets his team up. They're a counter-attacking team, so you don't want someone getting on the ball and just dictating play and slowly building up. That doesn't work. If you do that, then suddenly you're not giving early ball to Martial, Rashford and James. And if you're asking them to create space in and around the box when the opposition have got their defensive structure in place, they can't do it. So I don't really see that as a good marriage.
Where is Martial for you at the moment? Because Rashford's obviously out. Yeah. Started yesterday, just flattered to deceive so much. Ever since he made that brilliant breakthrough against Liverpool all those years ago, you felt then he could go on to be one of the best strikers in the world. And now you would think he's probably one signing away from not being in the Manchester United team.
No, it's incredible because you look at him and think, if we were to move him on, he could make a fool of you in terms of going on to do something. But I think the problem you have with Martial is that he doesn't consistently do it. And if you play for Manchester United, and he's not the only one, you've got to be able to do it week in, week out. You're talking about the pressures associated with playing with a club, that you're expected to win every game. I think they're way short of that. And I think you've now got a front three in Rashford, Martial, James, even Pereira, those type of guys who Manchester United fans are probably thinking, that's not at the level of some of the best teams in Europe. That's the problem you have. I'd counter that again by saying you may think that the player's not at the level, the manager's not at the level. Solskjaer's so far behind Guardiola, Klopp. How can they expect him to get them back to where they think they belong?
Wolves are in that top four mix as well, still, even with all the games they've had in the Europa League. Yeah. Manchester United, Chelsea, and now Tottenham very much back in it after this win. How do you see that playing out between now and the end of the season?
Well, it's a lack of consistency certainly from Chelsea and from Tottenham and Manchester United. I think that the team that Nuno has built at Wolves, you think about Moutinho, Neves, where they've played their football, they're used to playing at the top end of the league. The surprise was how comfortably they got out of the Championship, bearing in mind they're such good players and the physical demands of that. So I think they will be able to challenge. I know we're looking at Sheffield United up in fifth or sixth at the moment. We keep saying that won't continue, but they're surpassing all expectations and incredibly well. But I think it's just a case now that when the window has been closed, now every manager knows what squad he's got, and now they're going to have to make some sort of run for some consistency. Frank Lampard's not been able to do it with his young team. Manchester United certainly haven't been able to do it. But I think that Mourinho will be able to get that out of a Tottenham squad that's probably the weakest I've seen in three or four seasons.
Great stuff, Gary.
Thanks, mate.